Welcome to WPM, Writing, Publishing, and Marketing. This is a live event that is also recorded and podcast, and it's offered the second Tuesday of every month by Mott Publishing and WSCA Community Radio. So I'd like to thank the people who have shown up for the live event, and I'd like to thank the people who are listening. Mott Publishing is myself, Steve Carter, and my wife, Marilyn Carter. And the reason that we started this series was, well, I need to back up a little and tell you about the history of it. We published a cookbook about 6 years ago. We self-published it through what I call a publishing service. I'll talk about that more later. We got very involved in marketing the book. We did signings at bookstores and libraries and author events and food shows and all kinds of things. And then we decided we wanted to do a second edition of the book. By that time, we were not happy with the publishing company that we had gone with, so we decided to start our own publishing company. And then we got involved with a lot more author events and met a lot of authors who wanted to self-publish and didn't want to go through all the rigmarole of learning how to do ISBNs and LOCs and what's the difference between an N-dash and an M-dash and all that sort of thing. So we help people self-publish. One of our authors is here tonight, Michelle Lowry. We published her book and are working on another one. We've been very active in the author community in the Seacoast area, and we found a lot of great organizations. For example, the New Hampshire Writers Project, which I always like to plug because it's been a great organization. They have things like New Hampshire Writers Project Writers Night Out once a month. And it's just a hangout for writers to get together and talk about various aspects of writing. So there are plenty of opportunities for writing, but what we didn't find was one series that covered the whole gamut from the day you get the idea for your book through the writing and the publishing and the marketing. So that's what we're trying to cover in this series. Each month we bring in three authors. Sometimes I'm one of them, sometimes I'm not. And one talks about writing, and one talks about publishing, and one talks about marketing. Of course, any of us could talk about all of it because we do it all ourselves, and that's what being a writer is these days. This month we have, how do you pronounce your last name?
Heilshorn,
just like it looks. Butch Heilshorn and K.M. Doherty. I'll tell you more about them as I introduce them. So because we're recording this, the way I like to run it is, Butch will talk first for 10 minutes about writing, then I'll talk about publishing, and then KM will talk about marketing. And I'd ask you to hold your questions until the end, until all three of us have presented, and then we'll open it up for questions. And you can address your question to one of us or all of us, but I do like to ask each of the authors to respond to every question because I think what's valuable is that you hear different perspectives on the same issue. So we're going to start with Butch Heilshorn. He's an author and he's the co-owner of Earth Eagle Brewings in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. His book, Against All Hops, explores a whole new world of amazing botanical beer flavor.
Hi, everybody. Thank you. So I'm talking about writing. I'll give you a little bit of background on my writing in general. I have a master's degree in counseling, which involved a ton of writing, very highly scrutinized writing. I wound up in the public school system as a guidance counselor. And one of the most interesting things to do is to write letters of reference for kids applying to college, and to try and take 4 years of another human being's life and try and squeeze it into ideally a page, maybe a page and a half if they, if they had a ton of things that you just couldn't cram it into. A very challenging proposition, but something I really enjoyed. I felt I liked that challenge, almost like if any of you use Twitter, you know, and you punch in your message and then you realize you're 50 characters over. Okay, well, how do I reformat that to say what I... So, you know, it really forces you to choose your words nicely and whatnot. So I was in that business for 25 or so years. So that was a lot of those letters. Started home brewing with my brother-in-law about 10 years ago, and started winning some competitions for the beers that we were brewing. And one of the, it's not really a style, but a type of beer that we got into and that really interested me in the beginning was a style of beer that people call Gruitz now, G-R-U-I-T. And that's Old German for herbs, basically. That's what it means. That's what it meant originally. And then it came to mean a proprietary mix of herbs that brewers through the Middle Ages used in their beer. The Catholic Church at that time had control over that, taxed it heavily, made a lot of money. One of the interesting things, though, about brewing with herbs other than hops, and if you're not familiar with the hop plant, that's what's in 99.99% of all beers. Hops are kind of a sedative, and a lot of people make little pillows with hops to help them sleep. The types of herbs that people were using to brew beer with up until roughly the 1400s, 1500s were very, stimulant in their effect. And aphrodisiacal? No. You know what I'm saying. They were great for the libido. And so right around the time of the Reformation, hops became the favored beer ingredient because it mellowed people out, it depressed their sexual appetite, and they were just nicer to be around in general, according to the Protestants. Anyway, fast forward. I read a book about these beers and was fascinated, and at the time my wife was an herbalist. So I had been living in an apothecary for years and didn't really connect so much. It was kind of her thing and whatever. But then, this great interest of mine, bumping into this great interest of hers, it was wonderful. So I got to, have my... my free will in her apothecary. She was very supportive about me getting into this. And so anyway, as a home brewer, we did a lot of these types of beers. Won some competitions, had a lot of friends and family who were like, you really need to sell these beers. They're wonderful. And, fast forward roughly another 10 years, and we've had a brewery in Portsmouth for the last 5 years. Have continued to get a lot of great press for these unusual beers. Apparently the rest of the world has not quite caught on to this idea of back to the future, which is sort of what it is. I mean, it's going way back and bringing these kind of styles into the present day. One day I'm hanging out in the bar, and one of our regulars says, Butch, you got a really interesting thing going here. And I really like it a lot. I really like these beers. He's like, you ever think about writing a book? And as it turned out, I had been thinking about writing a book. I actually had a fiction novel that I had been writing for a while, but it was kind of not going anywhere. And I was really thinking a lot about trying to pull all this historical information into what my direct experience was with using these herbs and these brewing techniques and whatnot. So the timing was really perfect. He's like, my wife works for this publishing company. I think it would be right up their alley. You should talk to the owner, and I'll hook you up. So the next thing I know, within a week or two, I'm on the phone with the owner of Page Street Publishing in Salem, Mass. They do beautiful, very well illustrated and photographed books on everything from beekeeping to cocktail making to paleo diets to arts and crafts. I mean, they just do all sorts of stuff. But their motto is something along the lines of, we take what you like and make you better at it. Something like that. So, half-hour conversation with the owner of the company. And he says, Butch, I really wasn't expecting very much from this conversation. He goes, but I'm really excited, and I think we have something here. it took about another year to really for the rubber to really hit the road with the whole thing, and to actually, you know, have some deadlines and some things going on. And I was in limbo that whole year. I was like, is this going to happen or not? It was really irritating and tough to kind of just hold openly. But eventually, I think the thing that sealed the deal is the owner of the company had not been to our pub. When he came to the pub, he just had the smile wrapped around his face the whole time, and he just couldn't get enough of it. He's like, wow. He's like, this is not an if, this is a when situation. We're going to do this. We're definitely going to do this. So I guess that was about, I'm going to say, close to 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. It took me about 9 months, oddly enough, to write this book. And it was just super satisfying. It was definitely a challenge, but my routine was to get up pretty early in the morning and knock out between an hour and 2 hours of writing every morning, pretty much, at least 6 days a week before I went into work. And I think that's kind of my freshest time. And, you know, I'd sit in my office, and probably half of what I did was research and half of what I did was writing. And, looking back, it's kind of hard to imagine that I actually did that, actually pulled that off. You know, it was really quite an undertaking, which I didn't realize the scope of, I think, at the time where I signed on the dotted line. It was the real deal. You know, I got a series of advance checks and a great royalty arrangement with this company, and they're carried by Macmillan, which is an international, you know, distributor you guys are probably aware of. It probably couldn't have been any sweeter for a first-time writer, but there were a number of times where I was like, you know what, I'm going to send them back their check and go tell them to pound sand, because I didn't like how certain things were happening, or I couldn't really understand why they'd have these views and not these views. And it was really a humbling experience, because the people that I knew who were either in publishing or had been published were like, shut up and do it, because you have an opportunity here that not a lot of people have. And the last thing you want to do is turn around and throw it back in their face. Suck it up. Do what you have to do. And, of course, by now, the book's out. It's been out for, 2 months. And tons of great press and reviews. And, you know, it's all over the country. And it's a very surreal, you know, type of thing to know this. And it almost feels like a child, I guess, that you've let out into the world. And it's like, well, they're adults now. They're going to do what they do. But needless to say, it's been great for the brewery as well. It's definitely churned up a lot of interest. And we've got a lot of people showing up from all over the place who either heard about the book or heard about the brewery or whatever. So that's pretty much my journey. This is my first time getting published. I'm starting to get churned up now about maybe doing another book. I guess a good editor is going to limit you to what they want to see, or a company, a good publishing company. So there was stuff that I really, more philosophical, more historical stuff that they really reined me way back on, because ultimately it's a recipe book. There's 13 recipes, but they allowed me to have a couple of chapters in front of those and a chapter or two behind to sort of, you know, get on my little soapbox, I guess. In the end, I'm obviously feeling pretty good about it, and I'm glad I stuck with it. And it's just getting stranger and stranger now, in a good way, just to see how the book's being received and the various levels of interest that people have. You know, you've got a couple, it's a great recipe book. And then somebody else who like starts to appreciate the philosophy. There's some stuff about, you know, our relationship with nature and, you know, our failing ecosystem and all that kind of stuff, and how this kind of brewing can maybe help remedy some of these things. So there have been reviewers that have picked up on that, you know, kind of deeper meaning too. It's sort of all over the place, really. But I guess that's my story at this point.
All right, good.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm just going to grab my computer here because I can't see the screen.
Felt like a half hour. I wasn't sure that I could
pay attention. No, it's good.
Very good. Okay, I'm going to talk briefly about the publishing, the book production process, at least as we do it, and it's probably quite different from the experience that Butch had because we're just a small publisher. But the point I want to try to make today is I want to try to reach people who think that they might want to self-publish a book and are maybe hesitant to do it because they don't have any idea what's involved. And when you first find out what's involved, it can be a little overwhelming. But if you take it one step at a time, you can live through it. We started our publishing company because we had published the cookbook. I'm a jazz musician, so I wrote music to go with the cookbook. So there are two CDs that come with the cookbook. And we wanted to do a second edition, and we weren't happy with our publisher, so we learned to do it ourselves. And then as we started meeting more people, we started publishing books for other people. And we've been learning as we go along. So I've tried to put together what the steps are that you go through. And I think it's probably, for self-publishing, what we do for small publishers, is probably pretty typical. It's very different from a traditional publisher, I think. I think Butch would agree. In a traditional publisher, you pretty much turn everything over to them, and you pretty much have to do what they say in terms of the cover and, you know, how much philosophy you can put in and all that sort of thing. With us, all we try to do is help you to have the best product, make your book the best that it can be. We don't try to change what your book is. We try to help you put it into its best shape. So we start with initial consultation, and this is the thing that we found a lot of people are afraid to get to this step. Because you could be in various situations. You could have an idea with nothing written. You could have notes that you've been collecting for years. You could have a first draft. You could have a second draft that results from having it edited by somebody and you didn't like it and you're working on it again. There are all different levels that you could come to. All we ask in a consultation is you bring us something that represents your book. Many people bring us a full manuscript, and other people just bring us a notebook full of pieces of paper. We then do a quick evaluation reading of excerpts from the book, and most of the people, all of the people we've published so far are people we know. They've either been friends for many years or we've met them at various book events, so we know pretty much what the book is going to be like, and we can look at it very quickly and know. We know it's right for us because you wouldn't be there talking to us if it weren't. If you go into other publishers, you need to be prepared to defend your book and your approach and to make it clear to the publisher what you want to do, what's the goal of your book, how do you envision it. Because if you're self-publishing, you get to shape it, but you have to have an understanding with the publisher how it's going to be shaped. And then you submit a draft. Oh, by the way, in this video here, everything that the author has to do is highlighted in yellow. So you can see, we have this available on our website. If you go to Mod Publishing and go to the services page under the menu, you'll see this book production process PDF. You can download it, and it's a list. And the things that are in yellow are the things that you have to do, and the things that are in white are what we do. So we do the evaluation. You give us a draft. Usually it's in Word. You may or may not have already edited it, but we still give it a quick edit because there are a lot of little things that you can miss. Doubled words, missing words, what I call survivors. For example, you might have written, John went to the store, and then you realize, no, that happened the day before, so I have to say John had gone to the store, and you put in the word had, and you forget to change gone, and now you've got John had went to the store, and you think that you fixed it. And when you look at it, it looks right to you. But a third set of eyes or a fourth set of eyes will often catch that kind of thing. We proofread each. Marilyn and I both edit it, and we proofread each other's edits to try to catch things. And things still fall through the cracks. And then the author proofreads the edited version and approves it. And if there are more revisions, we go through that process again. And then if it's a nonfiction book, we asked the author to think about an index. Now, do you have an index in your book?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. When we first published our cookbook, we didn't have an index, partly because we didn't know what we were doing, and partly because it was an extra expense. We happened to run into someone who was learning to be an indexer and was willing to do it for free, and that was one of the things that prompted our second edition. Oh, we can add an index, and we can add this and that. People often ask me, did you compose and record new music? No, it's the same music in the second edition. but that's optional, the index. Then you have to nail down the title, the subtitle, and the pricing. And I always tell this story. I read a book by the author who published Catch 22, and originally it was called Catch, I don't know, 19 or something. Oh, 18, Catch 18. And a movie came out called Mila 18, and so they figured they had to change the name of the book. And they came up with different titles and finally changed it to Catch 22, but everything had already been set in place, and so they had to spend a lot of money to redraft and reprint. And to, these days, that's not necessary. You know, you can change things easily. But the title and the subtitle and often the pricing do have to be determined before the next steps can happen. We have to apply for a Library of Congress number for the book, and we have to assign an ISBN, an International Serial Book Number, I think it is. And so we need to know what the title is. It has to be nailed down. You can't change it after that. We need to register it for copyright. Same thing, yeah. The title and the subtitle need to be nailed down. Then you provide the back cover content. And a lot of authors don't, the first time authors don't think about this. You want a picture of yourself? Do you have a good one? Do you need to hire a photographer? You need a blurb that describes the book, so when somebody in a bookstore picks it up, they can spend a few seconds reading and get the essence. And I think these guys will tell you, though, that's a very difficult thing to write. You may want an author bio. You may want
endorsements.
Endorsements, thank you. So you need to start thinking about those things. Then we design and lay out the cover. You may have a cover artist who provides the graphics, the painting or whatever you're going to use for your cover. And then we put that into a file, and we do the back cover, and we send you that so you can see if it looks okay. Then we do the book layout, you know, the front matter, the table of contents, and all that sort of thing. We make sure that the margins are reasonable and take care of things like that. And then we send you that, and you approve the book layout. We send a print-ready PDF to the printer. Now, you can do all this for yourself. You could go through all these processes and go through Lightning Source or something like that. But you have to have a certain kind of PDF to submit. What's the Amazon?
CreateSpace.
CreateSpace. I guess with CreateSpace, I haven't used it, but I guess you can just upload a Word document and they'll take care of all of this stuff. But I've seen some books that have been done that way and they're not pretty. So we send the PDF off to the printer. He produces a print copy and sends it to the author. The author approves the proof copy, and then you print the books, and then you can either go and pick up the books. Our printer is just up, the printer we recommend, you don't have to use them, but they're just up in Portland, so we jump in the car and run up there and pick up the books, save you the shipping cost. And then, ta-da, your book release, and I'm sure KM will have some things to say about releasing the book. He's released two, and he's got another one in the works. You can create an ebook. We've created an ebook for Michelle's book, and we've created an ebook for the cookbook. That's optional. Fairly easy to do and fairly inexpensive. A lot of, if you're going to a publishing house, you know, a self-service publisher, and they charge you, going to charge you $300 to do an ebook, turn around and walk out, because once your book PDF is done, it's not hard to make it into an ebook. And you can create an audiobook. Michelle has recorded an audiobook with us, and we're still doing the final editing, and we hope to get that out soon. And I think KM is working on an audiobook, yes?
Mm-hmm.
And then after all that, you get to the hard part, which is marketing, and we do offer some sessions with advice for different ways to market. And we do have some things on our website about how you can market. And there's a ton of information out there, but there's so much that it can get confusing and overwhelming. So one of the things that I'm trying to do is to put together a pick list of the best advice that I found out there and try to simplify things. Okay, so that's my presentation. And I'm going to take a second to set this up for the next presentation, which is this. And I'm going to get my trusty little cheat sheet of introduction and my glasses so that I can read. And, all trouble writing.
Well, you can do just read this.
Oh, okay.
If you want.
Well, the thing I want to say about Cam Doherty, I've read two of his books. He's working on the third one now, and we've done a lot of events together.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the author of a series of books, and he'll tell you more about it. But they're good for middle. They're aimed at middle school and so forth.
It's a middle grade novel.
But they're a lot of fun read for an adult too. There's a lot of adult humor in there, and they're very well written. So I will let you.
Okay.
Take it away.
All right.
I'll put this out of the way. That should work.
So as Steve mentioned, I'm the author Cam Doherty, the author of the Thomas Holland series of middle grade magical fantasies. And each of them won an award. One was a local Seacoast award, Independent Publishers of New England, I guess a little bigger than that. It was a finalist award. They choose the three top books in that genre at the time, and mine was one of the three. But the second one, I just found out, won first place in Writer's Digest International Book Awards. And I was a bit in shock and didn't know what to do. And as this relates to this marketing topic I'm going to be talking about, I feel like when you win an award that's that big, you need to do something about it. People, it's not just going to be known that happened. I've got to market the heck out of it, and I feel like there's a narrow window. I maybe 3 to 6 months, I feel like it's news. But after that, it's going to be old news, you know? So I've done a... I hired someone to do a professional press release and send out 500 copies. I had them send it out too. But you've got to do a lot more. Luckily, with this one, it's not going to be published in, I found out in December, but it will be published in the March-April issue of Writer's Digest. So I still have a little bit of time before that, and then some time after that where it will be news. But anyway, that's exciting, but I still have to figure out what to do with it. And as Steve mentioned, I'm working on the third book in the trilogy. The second one was the one that won that award. And so now I have to make the third one better than the second one, of course. And so we'll see what happens. But I'm on about the fourth edit of it. It's fun. But it's a trilogy, so it's tying everything together. It's a lot more than I thought of when I first started the series. Okay, so I call this talk Marketing or Dancing with the Devil. Because most authors hate marketing, and so we'll go into some of that. And you can either decide if you want to do it or hire someone or give up writing entirely. That's up to you. So, and along that topic, okay, so you've written your masterpiece, it's been professionally edited, you've got wonderful cover artists and great back jacket verbiage, as you mentioned. So it's ready to be published. You're envisioning sitting on the Bahamas on your vacation villa, and you've got the day that it comes out on Amazon, you're expecting it to hit the bestseller list, right? Well, wrong. Once you finish the novel, your work has just begun. Now you must slither down that dark, demon-infested path called marketing. Okay, no, you scream. Not me. I'm going to hire a publisher. They're going to do all the hard work for me. Well, think again. I've talked to quite a few authors that have worked through even a major and second-tier publishers, and these days they're having the publisher wants the author to do all the hard work. They expect you to create the social media sites and be publishing, writing and tweeting and putting out social media information every day, really. And one author I was at an event with, and she said, yeah, that my publisher calls me every week and says, you're not doing enough of this, Facebook or Twitter, and switch this platform to here, put your emphasis in, but they're not doing it, the author's doing it. So you're still going to have to do a lot of the marketing yourself, whether you like it or not. Okay, so let's get down to business. Like I alluded to earlier, if you've heard this and now you're not frantically burning your manuscripts, we can move on and get down to business. So first off, the key to effectively marketing is knowing what book, who is exactly your target audience for this book. The easiest way is to find similar books on Amazon, and then you can page down and look at those books and find out who reads their books. And the same people that are reading their books is your target audience. So that's the first way, is to try to figure out who they are, because that's who you need to market to. And it's a lot easier and less expensive to market to a group than it is to the world. All right, so here's a list of marketing techniques that a lot of authors, and mostly I'm talking about fiction, but it applies to nonfiction as well. So I'm going to give you this list of things, and we'll go into more detail on a bunch of them. And I use a lot of them. I've tried them all, and some of them have worked better than others for me. So if you want more details than we have time to go into here, you can go to my website, www.thomashollandbooks.com, and there's a newsletter page. If you sign up for that, you'll get the newsletter, and I'll get the information to you that way through that. Okay, here's some of the techniques that most authors use. A website, Amazon or KDP ebook deals, if you remember, if you're doing ebooks, and social media, that's a big one, of course, these days. A newsletter, and that's worked very well for me. You can have paid ads, Facebook, Google AdWords, Amazon, there's a host of others, but those are some of the biggest. You can do your own blog and podcasts. You can have book trailers. I just came out with my first one. I hired someone to do that. You can do a paid blog tour, especially on if you're doing a book release. And a lot of these techniques I use, and a lot of authors do, on their book release, and that's really important to do more than one technique. You can do speaking engagements. You can do bookstore readings, the same thing with libraries. A lot of authors do those. You could do direct marketing to libraries, because libraries are a huge market for a lot of authors, and it gives you credibility, and same thing being in a bookstore, it's a good exposure. I'm a children's book author, so if you are also a children's book author, you can do school presentations. That's a great way to expose it to teachers, school librarians, and the kids, of course, and their parents. Kind of tough, actually, marketing right to the kid. You have to decide who, that's my target audience, but I really have to market to teachers and librarians and parents. So I can't get directly, easily to my target audience. So I have to be a little tricky. Goodreads giveaways. Goodreads is one of the largest readers groups on the planet. Last time I checked, something like 14 million subscribers to Goodreads. And what I'm going to talk about first in more detail is your book launch campaign, which Steve alluded to a little earlier. Okay, so this is mission critical, your book launch. You need to send out ARCs, advanced reader's copies. Typically, publishers say do it 6 months to a year out. I have trouble putting it out that far because I want to get it out there. I have fans that are bugging me all the time. When's the next one going to be out? So it's really tough. I usually get them out 2 or 3 months out, but this one I'm going to try and get at least 6 months out before I send out the ARCs. And you want those to go out to the press, and big-time bloggers, and anyone on social media that has tens or hundreds or millions of followers, because if they'll say something nice about your book, then that can help a lot. Something I've recently learned about, and I'm hoping to do on this book, is a launch team of other authors where they'll help. I agree to help them, and they'll agree to help me, and I'll go more in depth if we have time. We've got about 10 minutes, right? So at some point, I'll wrap it up, but there can be questions after, so we can touch on more of this if you're interested. So when I'm doing a book launch, I usually subscribe to a blog tour, maybe 1 to 2 weeks, where a bunch of bloggers sign up to have something on a particular day of mine that goes out. It can be a review, it could be just talking about the characters, or maybe they've interviewed me. Sometimes they'll interview a character, so I have to answer as one of my characters. They're fun. I have a newsletter, so if you have a newsletter, if you have people that you know are interested, especially if it's not your first book, so you've got some, then that's very powerful. You want to ask for a call to action, so pre-order my book and tell everyone you know and try to create a buzz that way. Social media, which is very popular these days, of course. Paid ads, I do that. I do a giveaway on a book giveaway of my, usually an ARC, an advanced reader's copy, to Goodreads, and that's more exciting to them than a book that's already been out for 6 months. I send out press releases to the press. If it's a sequel, as mine are, then I do a free KDP campaign where we'll go into a little bit more detail on that to get people to read my first book for free, hoping then they'll buy the next one and on and on. And the most important thing is to make sure that everything culminates at the time of your book launch. So I mentioned an author's website, and I think every author should have one, but it's not really the best, most effective way of marketing these days, but I still think you have to have it, it seems like. And there are some free hosting sites to help you get started with tools to build it if you don't have those skills or don't want to jump in to something more drastic. It should match your image, though, and this is really important, even book to book. If you're doing a sequel or all your books are in a genre, you want your look and feel to be the same. So someone picks up your book, they recognize that it's probably you. And it also, your target audience, you should have an image that they relate to. It feels right when they pick up your book. Well, the same thing, your website should match that look and feel that your audience is expecting and that your books have. So if you've got artwork, it should have the same artwork or complementary. The fonts you use should be the same. Everything about your website should match that look and feel and be comfortable to your target audience. Match the image you're trying to portray. And that would work, too, with nonfiction, that you have an image and a certain clientele that is very interested in your subject. Okay, so I mentioned here, for instance, if you have a picture of a bare-chested, muscle-bound male, it's perfect maybe if you're a romance novelist, but it doesn't make sense if you have a nonfiction book on beer making.
I got a good story about that.
Okay, I've got a good beer story too. Okay, so the KDP book deals, these have worked very well for me. There's one catch to use them most effectively, and you have to belong to KDP Select. KDP is Kindle Direct Publishing, and it's owned now by Amazon. But to be a member of KDP Select, you have to sell your book exclusively on Amazon. There's a few other minor rules, but that's the big one. But before you even get too far in the countdown deal or the free deal, you've got to hone your categories on Amazon. And once again, the best way to do that is to look at familiar books or similar books to yours. Then you can page down to Amazon's bestseller rank, and you can see where they rank in various categories. And it'll tell you where the categories. For instance, mine is often in children's books, magical fantasies, and it can go to sword and sorcery. There's tons of little branches down there. So look at your competitors, the ones that are probably your target audience, and see what categories they rank highest in. And that's who you want to be, have your book shown in there. So you can go back to Amazon through Amazon's Author Central and say, hey, could you move my books? You've got them in these categories and it doesn't make sense. Can you put them in these? And they'll do that. They'll usually say they'll give you two, but they'll often give you three categories. So match that up. So, of course, I looked at Harry Potter and Percy Jackson, Lord of the Rings, and looked where they're the highest in, and then asked them to put mine in those. Oh, and then back, once you've got that home, then you want to do your free or countdown deal. And at the same time, you can't just make it free for a day to 5 days and have anyone notice it. You still have to advertise somewhere. And there's these great sites like Free Booksy or Bargain Booksy, and there's a host of others where tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands of people subscribe to find out when a book in their favorite genre is going to be free or radically reduced in price. So for most of them, it's a reasonable cost. You can advertise on those. So oftentimes, I'll do two or three, or sometimes more, especially on a book launch, and I'll get to 3,000, 5,000 people to download the first book, and then a bunch of those will buy the second book, because they've hopefully read and enjoyed the first book, and some people will buy the first book because they'll tell others about it, and so it'll make a spike in sales that lasts maybe a month to two, sometimes three. You'll get a little bit going on. Some authors will actually do a free deal almost constantly, something new every month, and advertise it. That's worked pretty well for me. The 1,000-pound gorilla in the room is social media, and a lot of authors, that's all they do, and that's what worked best, especially young authors that have grown up with social media. They're really adept at it, and they enjoy posting all the time. But if you don't like that, you can hire someone to set up those sites and post. They say posting every day is the best, at a minimum of twice a week. There is software to to help you post, so you can schedule posts, and it'll post to several sites at once. So the other are ads you could put out on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. Oh, these are the social media sites, and there's a ton of them out there these days. But as I said, if that isn't for you doing all that posting, you can hire someone you trust, ideally. Or there are sites online like Upworks and Fiverr that you can pay professionals. So you can look at their resumes and what people have said about them and choose and try them out a short time. And if you like it, then you can go from there with those workers. But for it to work, you really have to be consistent. You have to be posting or have someone posting all the time. And I mentioned the software tools. A newsletter helped me an awful lot. At my events, I put out a sign-up sheet. Anyone that buys them, maybe a third to a half of those people want to be on my newsletter. Excuse me. So I let them know with the newsletter where I'm going to be that week and any giveaways I have. I had a dragon naming contest in the first one the kids loved, and et cetera, et cetera. And also, the call to action I mentioned, I do. But I've got like 2,300 people have signed up on the list. So that's very popular and powerful because those are my fans. Those are the ones that like your book. So if you can get names, that's one of the most powerful things you can use as a newsletter. And from that, them telling their friends, it's wonderful. And I've had lots of people excited about getting the next book. So it's a great tool. You can, a lot of authors do blog posts, and you can do your own. You can host on your website, or you can go to these central sites and where tons of bloggers have their things. There's pros and cons of all that stuff. And the paid ads I mentioned before, these, I've tried all these places. If that's all I'm doing, I don't see a huge return on that. But once again, especially part of a book release, I do a little of everything, and so I always have some ads out there. Targeting them is the best. You can go on and say, "Well, I for mine, I want I want mostly like fans of Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings, and then you can choose all kinds of things. You can choose demographics, male or female. You can choose where they live. You can choose what their profession is if you want. School teachers, for instance, or librarians. So the targeted ads are a little more cost effective. You're getting to the your target audience a little more easily. And some people I've seen in various professions, but even besides being an author, have had luck with just boosting a post, a popular post on their Facebook business, you know, author's page. And that has worked pretty good for me. Am I running out of time? All right. So anyway, in to tie this up, there's a wonderful quote that's often quoted to be from Ben Franklin, but there's no real evidence of it. But I love the quote anyway. It says, I'm paraphrasing, I totally believe in luck, and I find the harder I work, the more luck I have. So I wish you luck with your marketing of your books.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Before I open up to for questions, I just want to remind you that this is being recorded, and the podcasts are available on podomatic.com. You can reach that by going to podomatic.com and searching for Mod Publishing, and you'll find all of these. This is our eighth one, so there's some of them didn't get recorded, but there's a bunch of them out there. There's a lot of good information that has come from the authors that have offered their help for free to people. You can look on iTunes, search for Mod Publishing, and you can find the podcasts there. For the question and answer period, because the microphone might not pick up the question, when you ask a question, I'll repeat it to make sure the microphone gets it. So let's open it up for questions. You can address a question to any one of us or all of us. Not all at once, though. Don't all raise your hands simultaneously.
Time for eating and drinking.
Well, as I used to say when I was teaching college, either we've totally confused you and you don't know where to begin to ask a question, or you already knew everything anyway and you're bored to death.
Well, can I say
yes.
Something? Actually, my wife and I took a three-week river cruise in Europe and went to, it ended in Amsterdam, and we went to a brewery in Haarlem, the Netherlands, which is near Amsterdam, and they did something very similar. They had found ancient recipes that didn't use hops. They had all kinds, and we got a sampler of a bunch of them. It was wonderful there, but the government, the Netherlands government, would not allow them to sell it as beer or ale without hops in it. So they've got these huge vats. I have no idea, hundreds of gallons maybe, but the brewmaster said he would take one grain of hops, stand over the vat and drop it in, and then the government was fine.
Very familiar with that
I bet
technique,
you are.
Because that's the same in the United States, pretty much.
Interesting. I thought that was hilarious.
Just to chime in on something, when I signed the contract with this publishing company, there was some verbiage in there about going out on tours and speaking at places and stuff, and I was, you know, alternately excited and terrified at the prospect of that. When push came to shove and the book came out and blah, 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 I was like, so when does all this stuff start? And they're like, hey, you know what? We don't really do that anymore. We find that online is a much better way to spend our time, our energy, and our money. And, you know, by all means, do some regional stuff. Do whatever you want to do, but we won't be sending you out at all, which was like, oh, really? You know, but I guess that you know, it's a testament to the social media and the power of the internet. So,
is the question?
Maybe you could each answer separately, but it's a daunting task to do a post every day. But what do you do for posts? Maybe once or twice a week, or how do you come up with your posts?
Okay, the question is, if you can't post every day and you only post a couple of times a week, how do you come up with ideas for those posts?
Well, I'll start. How I do is try to find anything that's in the news or is topical that I can relate anyway to it, and then I'll put that out. And also, you can subscribe, you can be friends with a lot of other authors or public figures and on Twitter, and you can like those posts and then add your own take on it. And if I've heard that a lot of people say there's the 80-20 rule where you want to enlighten or, you know, make it funny or whatever 80% of the time and only be selling your product 20%. So it's great to have anything you're interested in. You can say, yeah, and I agree, and this and this and this. And when you can, slip in a little, you know, nudge for your book.
What do you do?
Oh, yeah. God, yes. So I do all the social media for the brewery. And the web page for the book is actually a page on the brewery site. So you can reach it independent of going through the brewery, but that's where it's housed. So I haven't really been doing a lot of social media for the book, like by itself. It's all within the grouping of the business, I guess, which is nice because it all plays in together. And to echo what you were saying, you know, it's great to let people know that we've got a lunch special. It's great to let people know that the Boston Globe just did a review on my book. Well, that's one thing that I always will post as a link if something like that comes out, you know, and let people know. But like you were saying, if there's an interesting article that comes out on beer history or hopless beers or something about craft beer maybe or whatever, people really appreciate that. And I think they take you a little more seriously than someone who's just out there, you know, hucking a book and, you know, you want their money. You know, you're trying to engage with them and have a discussion with them, if you will. And there's obviously always more going on than your book. But by the same token, you get to guide that conversation. It's yours to direct. We post pretty much every day for Earth Eagle. And I would say once a week or once every other week, there's something that comes through that's exciting about the book that I'll put up. So it's important to mix it up.
For sure.
And it's value added because your customers are wanting, they like this stuff, so
exactly.
They want to learn anything they can. So they're thankful for you to do that. But it also, even if you don't mention anything about your book, it keeps you and your brewery and your book in their minds.
That's it. And that's really the name of the game. And one of the things that I wrestle with, and I'm not sure how you feel about it, is sometimes it feels like, God, I'm like, you know, besieging these people with my posts. I'm doing this every day. Well, there's plenty of people who do it several times a day, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And just because you might be put off by multiple posts in a day or a bunch in a week doesn't mean the rest of the world is. So I've had to kind of... And I think I'm still trying to find it, a balance between what I'm personally comfortable with as a consumer and what people are telling me the rest of the world can take or are interested in.
Yeah, I've been on the web a lot since the very beginning because I started as a computer programmer as a hobby, and I was using the World Wide Web when there were no pictures. It was all words. And I have a website called Frog Story Records that if you go on Wikipedia and look at the oldest music education website on the internet, that's it. I started before 2002, but that was when the web started to go visual and that's when they started counting, but I started it long before that. And I've been on Amazon. I was on the Amazon, what they call the Advantage program. I'll just digress for a second. If you are a small publisher, you can't go through the full Amazon program. You have to meet certain criteria. You have to sell a certain number of books. You have to publish a certain number. If you're a publisher, you have to publish a certain number every year. It's way beyond anything we could do. But they started Amazon. I joined in 1997 when I recorded my first solo jazz CD. And so I've been on Amazon since then. And I've sold a lot of CDs, but through Amazon, I think I've sold maybe a dozen CDs in all the years that I've been on there. And we, have been on Amazon for our cookbook and all of our other books, and I'm turning out to be very anti-Amazon because their prices are ridiculous, the requirements are ridiculous, their reporting is insufficient, and we sell 10 times as many books in person as we've sold on Amazon, maybe 100 times as many books as we've sold through Amazon. So I'm always the devil's advocate here, because I agree that if you can do this and you enjoy doing it like KM does and like Butch does, and you're good at it, all this social media and going through Amazon and all that sort of thing, well, good luck to you and have fun. But frankly, Marilyn and I are always debating about, she said, well, should you post this? And I keep saying, no. Show me who shows up because they saw it on Amazon. Who shows up for an event because they saw it on Amazon? Nobody. They show up because we met them at a book event, or we've known them for 12 years, or because, you know, they know our grandson or something. You know, it's all person to person. And I try to urge, the reason I know these guys is because I've gone to his pub and I've gone to his book events, and we know them personally. So it's good to have all this social media stuff, but I really think most of the people I've met, and again, we're fairly low level. We're small potatoes. I'm not talking about Stephen King and, you know, Dan Brown and people like that. Sure, they can, you know, they have the money behind them, and this stuff will work for them because they're putting so much money into it. But for most of the people I've met, and not only in the 6 years or so that I've been doing publishing, but in the 50 years I've been a professional musician, it's who you know. It's who you talk to. It's who you treat well. Those are the people that will help you out, that will buy your stuff, and that will give you the gigs, and so on and so forth.
We all hope for a super fan that will just tell the right people and everyone they know about our work. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. That's fine. Another question.
I'm just wondering, how many books have you sold?
Well, so I'm 2 months in. They published, I think, 5,200 copies, and I think a quarter of them are gone. So I guess, I don't know if that's good or bad, but it seems good.
Sounds yeah. very good yeah. to me. Sounds very good.
I have heard that even the major publishers, they feel like they broke even if they paid an advance to an author, and within some period they sell 2,000 books. So, you know, so they think that was good. So I assume a bunch of them don't sell anywhere near that,
right?
That they chose.
And you can imagine I'm not getting a whole bunch per book. And then we bring in the Amazon thing. It's wonderful to be able to go, yeah, you know, it's on Amazon or whatever. But the reality is a little shadier, I think, because they don't sell anything for full price. It's about discounting. So, you know, if you go into a bookstore around here or come to the brewery, the book's $18.99. You go onto Amazon, I think it's $12.99 or something. And that's just, you know, they get to name their price. They get to do what they want. And I have some very mixed feelings about, you know, feeding the beast, you know. And I'm a newbie at it. I'm not really sure how it will settle out. But it's not a completely comfortable situation with them.
I've sold 5,500 of my first book, and my second one just came out last year, or the end of the other 2016, and it sold about 2,500. And those are the ones I've sold at events, and I've, you know, sold a few hundred on Amazon. So, and mostly that's because I've advertised. I don't think I've ever made money on those ads. I still hope. That's the only way. I can only be at one event at a time. I'm going to peek out. Once I get the third book, I think I can get to 20,000 sales that I can do myself. But if it's ever going to go bigger than that, I've got to figure out how to get the online stuff going. And Amazon is the big gorilla in that room.
Yeah, that's another point that I'd like to make, too, is that frankly, I think that KM and Butch both have books that have tremendous potential and could sell large numbers. We meet a lot of people who want to be the next Stephen King, Dan Brown, fill in the blank, whoever that is. They really want to make money at this. They really want to make it big. And we say, thank you very much, nice meeting you, and go on to the next person, because that's not what interests us, Marilyn and I. You know, We're thrilled if somebody reads our book. We're thrilled if somebody buys a copy of our book. We're thrilled if somebody says, I like that recipe you had for such and such, or somebody says, I like that poem you wrote about such and such. So we're more into educating than we are into making money. That's just the nature of who we are. So I mentioned that because, you know, between offering these events and all of the things that we do, and our website and my writer's blog that I have on there, my writer's journal, I lecture a lot, and I try to keep it clear that my goals may not necessarily be another writer's goals, but if your goals happen to align with mine, then here's some here's a contrary or an alternative view of what marketing is worth, and what marketing is worth doing and what it's not worth doing. It all depends on what you want to get out of it. For me, small numbers are good. I will plug, but I don't think I mentioned my website, and I don't think you mentioned your website.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. What's your...
So our brewery website is eartheaglebrewings.com. And you can see in the drop down where to get to the book, or what we have on tap, or what the press we've had, yada yada yada. It's all there.
I just wanted to. I've mentioned the website Mod Publishing, but I just do want to also mention the my writer's journal, because it's I make it educational as best I can. I try to pass on the experiences that I've had. For example. I've been submitting poetry for over 50 years. It was first published over 50 years ago, and I don't have the numbers handy right now, but it's something like, if you count, in a given submission, you might send 5 poems, and you will send to a bunch of different magazines. You might just submit to one magazine more than once, and you might submit the same poem to multiple magazines. Taking all that into consideration, I've submitted approximately 2,793 times, and I've been published 52 times. So those are the odds, you know. I spell that out, and I show the magazines and the things that get published, and say, I submitted this, I wrote this 23 years ago, and I submitted it 29 times, and on the 30th time it got published. So, yeah, there's some discouraging, encouraging news there. And it's really hard to get anybody to go to your web page anymore. Everything is the social media. So when I have a venue like this where I can plug my writer's journal, I do that. The same thing with my guitar site, Frog Story Records. I took almost everything that I wrote when I was teaching at Berklee College of Music after I retired and dumped it on there. So instead of spending $60,000 a year to go to Berklee College of Music, start with my website and practice those things. Okay, was there another question?
When you do your social media, do you always add your website at the end of your post? Or
the question is, when you do social media, do you add your website at the end of the post?
It depends what social media. Usually not. If I have a Twitter account and I've got 6,000 Twitter followers, so I just post it. They know who I am. Occasionally, though, if I've got more information, I try to drive them to the website because you don't have a lot on Twitter. But I've also posted on Facebook. But once again, most of those people know who I am. They've liked it, and those are probably where they want to be. But if there's, like when my video came out, I put links on Twitter and Facebook, but I point them at my website, at the link, so it goes through my website, and it actually raises my website's score on Google and the other search engines, because it's going through there to get to it, so it looks like people are hitting it more, which they are, but it also gets them to the website in case they want to view some of the other things, but I don't typically do it every post.
I think most of the different social media platforms, when you set up your account, you can plug in your website so that if someone goes and sees you on Twitter or Facebook, usually in that first page there's a link. Regardless, you know, there's always a link there. And same thing. If we let's say all of a sudden we've got 6 or 8 events for the brewery, we'll post a link to our events page
so people can go there and see that. Or what other situation? Anytime there's like more information than we can stuff in a single post, we'll refer people to our website. But generally, it's kind of taken care of, really. When you set up the account, that's usually there.
Right. If they go to look at your account on Twitter or Facebook or that, you've got a bunch of information, and that's definitely one they can click on and go there. But general posts, we don't necessarily do that every time.
It reminds me of something that Dan Sesney said. He was a guest here a couple of months ago, and we were talking about this same subject, and he said, remember that the thing that you're selling is not your book. You're selling yourself. And as long as you keep that in mind, people will get interested in you. Once they're interested in you, they'll find your books, they'll find your website, they'll find all the other stuff.
I find like I'm still getting over that. Like, look, man, I wrote the book. Do I need to, isn't there somebody else who could do all this stuff? And the reality is you're going to get what you put into it. And I've been dragged a little bit kicking and screaming. But I'm starting to see the merit in it and get over my, whatever, self-consciousness or whatever, and just realize, hey, if you wrote a book and nobody sees it, what's the big deal, you may as well do what you can do to make sure that the most amount of people can get their hands on it or their eyeballs on it.
Well, yeah. And as Steve mentioned, you should be marketing yourself, unless this is the only book you ever intend to write, because you'll get speaking engagements for you. But the books help to get these speaking engagements, and you can get paid. I get paid for the school visits, but a lot of authors don't want to market themselves. They want, if they do any market, they want it, the book. But you really have to. It is about you, especially if you're going to write more books.
And it's not always immediately lucrative. Like that sounds great to go into a school and get paid. But like I was at an event where it was at a winery, and the local bookstore had already bought a bunch of copies of my book. So I was there pouring beer. And talking about the book, but all the sales went to the bookstore down the street. And you think on the outset, well, that's kind of lousy. But in the end, in the big picture, whatever energy I can put out there, I think is going to be worth it, regardless of whether I see an immediate payoff or I'm sure the numbers got the national numbers got boosted. I'm sure I've got some goodwill with this bookstore and this winery. I definitely got rid of a lot of beer. People were pretty thirsty and interested. So that's a great thing for the brewery. So, it's just something to keep in mind.
Like that, though, you really should control that. You can sell books at that event, and then if they don't want to buy it that day, they can buy it at the bookstore.
And I could have done that. And I probably will need to put a little more thought into how these things go, but I guess my point is I had to get over that. Oh, I'm driving all the way up there. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. I can deal with that. Some of that on my taxes, really. So,
yeah, a lot of most authors, if they're doing events, it's bookstores and libraries, and I have done those, but I still do them. But I've hardly sold any books at those things, and then if they're buying them through Ingram, I make like 70 cents a book or something ridiculous. But on the other hand, it gives you credibility and it gives you exposure maybe to an audience who'd never heard of your brewery. And
it's
so,
great for yourself,
right.
Yeah.
So it's part of the deal, I do them anyway, but that's not how I sell them. I do those just for the credibility and the exposure, but I mostly go to other events, even craft fairs and holiday fairs. I'll sometimes sell, like on a 3-day event, I've sold over 300 books, if I sell 4 to 10 at a bookstore, that's a good day,
So it's good to hear that, because that's the other thing. Like when you first get started, you have no idea what normal is. And what he just said about just selling a couple at a bookstore makes a lot of sense. I was at a brewer's conference, on the other hand, and sold a pile of books.
Right.
And, look, half of that money went right in my pocket.
Yeah.
Which was pretty sweet.
Much nicer.
Bookstores, they're all about themselves. You're not their priority. You they have to do as much as they can.
Well, the comment was bookstores are all about themselves, which is true, but like everything else, some are better than others. And we found a lot of bookstores that are very supportive, and sometimes we go in because we want to support the bookstore. There are some bookstores we go, we know we're not going to sell anything. But again, we were on a mission. I mean, one of the reasons we're publishers is because we love books and we want people to read, and we want them to read what we think of as being good books. So we're willing to, you know, to do that. So again, it's, you know, some bookstores we might sell more, but I don't like the bookstore and I'm not going to go to it. So you make your choices.
It does help the bookstores out. Besides giving us credibility, they get people to come in. They'll advertise the heck out of it a lot of times to get people into their store to see us. So it's a win-win.
I had a really good experience a couple of weeks ago at Water Street in Exeter. And again, they bought all their books, and that's what was getting sold. They set me right up at a table right at the door, basically, and copies of the book. I brought some beer, and then there was another author next to me. And fortunately, it was a super busy store. And that's really, you know, I don't know that anyone was in there to see me per se, but I would say at least, you know, 2/3 of the people stopped and tried the beer and went, you know, I've never tasted anything like that before. What's the story? And, you know, sold a couple of books during the 2 hours that I was there. Mm-hmm. But I definitely felt like I got exposure. You know, that's you can't really buy that.
I was at Water Street once, and a community, little tiny community television station recorded
yep.
it.
Yep.
And then they edited it. They put in these cheesy pictures of a dragon walking across with music, and it was hilarious. And I have the link to that from my website. So, you know,
Exeter's a pretty good community for that. We did an event, the brewery did an event at there's some tavern down there that the Historical Society runs, and that television station was there
yeah.
and did a nice little interview. And
it was very nice.
So I guess the message is it varies wildly. You know,
and then kind of. You're on consignment, it's really wild.
Yeah, consignment is.
You don't get paid for years.
Yeah, consignment is
yeah.
an issue we haven't discussed, I don't think, so far in this whole series. So for those who don't know, a lot of bookstores will take your books on consignment, and 60-40 is pretty much standard. So you get 60. You've already paid to have the book printed if you're self-published, and now you're paying them to take your book, and then you have to call them and you have to chase them down to get your money, and then you have to wait for the check, and sometimes it bounces. And,
yeah. I've had horrible luck with, if I don't follow up, I don't get paid.
Yeah.
You know, and. It's kind of a pain because they're just a few sale, but it's not just bookstores too. All kinds of places
yeah.
will take books on consignment,
yeah.
and I would think it would be better, like yours, if you're in a store that sells brewing equipment. That's a much better place than a bookstore to have
sure.
your book,
absolutely.
You know, because there's people coming in for that subject,
mm-hmm.
especially if you're the only book on brewing. You know, perfect.
I think the other thing too is if you know, if you feel like wheeling and dealing with some of these people, is to roll in and try and come up with a price where they just buy them off you and you're done. You know, it might be worth it to take a little bit of a hit and maybe do 50-50, or let them do this, let them get the 60%, so that you can, you know, give them the books, get the money, and you're done.
Except
they'll do that.
I think some of them will, but when they sell out your books, they don't call you back.
That.
You need to still follow up if they're
yeah.
going to get more books.
Exactly. And you'd think as a business, they'd be right on that.
Yeah.
If the books are selling, well, you probably want
exactly.
to have them. There's a little bit of human nature mixed into this as well.
Other questions? If not, I think we'll wrap it up and go to the food and beverage section of the program. I want to thank Butch Halcorn and K.M. Daugherty for joining us tonight. I want to thank WSCA Community Radio for providing the facilities here. I want to thank Mott Publishing and Marilyn Carter in particular for the food. We have some unusual food tonight, and I want to thank Butch for the beer, and I want to thank all of you for coming out, and I want to thank the listeners for listening.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks
thank
for coming
you.
Out.
Thank you.